this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
I'm waiting for you to start talking so we can both
start thinking. How do we start this episode?
I never know how to start an episode or do the middle or end either.
It's post-election.
It is.
The hangover edition is gone.
It is.
So now it's hard to believe, you know, politics never stops. But in Texas, we're 60-something days away from the state legislature.
Yeah, so it's like take a breath and start running all over again at full speed. And, you know, we say 60 days away. It's essentially already underway. I mean, they're off and running, you know, getting ready for this session. And what I'm interested to see in this one is, you know, Republicans feel like they've gotten this mandate nationally now, and certainly here in Texas.
They did get a mandate nationally in Texas.
Yeah, and they're feeling good about that.
Sure.
So, you know, the last session we saw a lot of, you know, quote unquote red meat for the base. I'm curious how much more of that we're going to see this time around, now that, you know, Republicans are even more emboldened than they were going into this year.
And so on this episode, we have the most powerful person at the state capitol in Austin is Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. And
some would say in Austin, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just at the capitol, but even more powerful than the governor in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because in his role as Lieutenant Governor, he decides what legislation lives and dies and moves and doesn't get a hearing, et cetera, doesn't get a vote on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about a number of things with him in this interview you're about to hear, but he hit a few things that really, really stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to hit those real quick. School choice, school vouchers, money on the border. We're spending $4 billion right now on the border.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen with that now that Donald Trump's elected? And then casino gambling.
Hmm.
I just happened to bring that up in this interview you're about to hear, and what he told me is fascinating. But priority number one is school choice, school vouchers.
That was a big priority, says, the last time around as well, and they did not get it through in large part because of Republican opposition.
Right. But what happened since then?
Yeah, and then we saw the revenge tours from Governor Abbott taking out a lot of these Republicans who didn't go along with it the last time around. Traditionally, it's been these rural Republicans who've held that up. Now they think they're feeling really bullish, thinking that they've got enough of these seats flipped to where they can push this thing through. And this is going to affect anyone in Texas who has school-aged children.
And that's what I asked about in the interview here. When will this take effect if it passes? How much money will parents get? You know, what are the details on this? Now, obviously, you know, a lot of this hasn't been created yet because bill filing opens this week in Austin. But Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said this will get the title of Bill Number 2, Senate Bill Number 2. Why does that matter? Well, the lower the bill number, the higher the priority. So Senate Bill 1 is always the budget. That's the only thing the legislature has to do according to the state constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Come together every 2 years, pass the budget. Well, they do that, plus they also come up with 6,000 other bills that they debate. Some of them, rise to the prestige of becoming a Y'allitics episode, like this one. But Senate Bill 2 is going to be school choice, school vouchers.
So that tells you right there that it's huge priority.
That means it's going to be discussed a lot. Now, I'm curious to see what happens in the House, because mm-hmm. Dade Phelan is still likely going to be reelected as Speaker. Is he on board with this now?
Yeah, he was a bulwark the last time.
He
kept this from really going through, but he survived mm-hmm. in his seat in the first place in deep southeast Texas by the skin of his teeth, barely got reelected, and now he's got to go through the process of being elected Speaker again. Does he have to make some concessions to pull over some of these people to his right? Does he have to move to the right as well and agree to this?
And that's the political thing to watch, I think, when the legislature returns to Austin January 14th. The other thing that I asked Lieutenant Governor about, too, I asked him this question in 2016, and that is, Texas started spending $1 billion or so at the border back during the Obama administration.
Yeah.
We've got to protect the border. The Obama administration doesn't do it. That's what Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick said. Well, the U.S. elected Donald Trump in 2016, so I asked him then, okay, so Trump's in there. He campaigned on a strong border. We're going to build the wall. We're going to make Mexico pay for it. Remember all that?
Yeah, yeah.
But Patrick said at the time in 2016, no, we're still going to spend money on the border. We need to see what happens.
Mm.
Well, fast forward 8 years, I asked him the same question again. Now that Trump's elected, will Texas still spend $4 billion mm-hmm. biennium mm-hmm. on the border? And to my surprise, he said, no, we can pull some of that money back mm. to focus on the issues that we have here in the state.
But I love that you get into gambling as well, casino yeah. gambling, because this is a hot one, and it's been hot for a while. It's been bubbling beneath the surface. I think that some of the answers that you've gotten here are going to drive some of these folks absolutely crazy. I'm thinking of two in particular, the co-owners of the Dallas Mavericks,
sure.
Mark Cuban and Miriam Adelson. She's famous for coming in from the Las Vegas Sands mm-hmm. empire, buying a huge stake in the Mavericks, the majority stake in the Mavericks, with the thought that we would have, sports gambling and gambling in general here. I'm real curious to see what happens with that. You got big money in this state wanting that to happen, but it, has to go through Austin, and it might get stopped there again.
And it sounds that way. You'll hear what the Lieutenant Governor says here in just a moment, but it's fascinating. I get asked this a lot when I'm out. Hey, do you think that, casino gambling's going to pass this go-round? Texas doesn't need the money,
yeah.
and it's not going to pass until Texas needs the money, most likely. Now, you'll hear Lieutenant Governor, offer a few more reasons why it is not going to pass, but that's the bottom line here. And Dallas, people in Dallas and everybody, who loves sports is just floored. I don't understand how this won't pass.
Yep.
Oh, well, they're going to pull the Mavs out of Texas, out of Dallas. They don't care.
They don't care about that.
The lawmakers don't care.
No.
They don't care.
And let's be
real.
It's
a big state.
And let's
it's not centered around Dallas.
Let's be real here. The state doesn't need the money right yeah. now because it's got this huge surplus
sure.
once again. Also, lawmakers, when we're speaking about money, there's a lot of lobbying that comes yeah. into Austin from all the surrounding states that do have gaming. You got New Mexico, you've got Oklahoma, you've got Louisiana.
Yep.
There's a lot of lobbying. There's a lot of whining and dining of those lawmakers in Austin to keep the status quo the way it is.
And that's one thing that Lieutenant Governor said. He said, for all the excitement that's in Dallas right now, we really just haven't seen them down here in Austin really working the vote. Talking to individual lawmakers, explaining why this should pass, why it's such a great idea, and how they could get around the opposition. And the opposition is something else the Lieutenant Governor's never really mentioned before, and I haven't heard people talk about. Dan Patrick says, if this does get some momentum, you'll hear in the interview here, he said, that's when you'll start hearing from the other side.
Mm.
Pastors, the business people who just oppose this, who mm-hmm. don't like it. Mm. So we get into the border. We get into Trump's election, we get into the casino gambling, but we start the interview off here with Lieutenant Governor on school choice, on school vouchers, and that's where we begin.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
Governor, welcome back to the program. You announced on Friday school choice is a top priority for the Senate. You're going to give it a top number bill-wise, too, which really means it's going to be a top priority. What kind of plan do you want senators to pass?
So, Jason, we have passed school choice out of the Senate, I believe it's now 5 times. The last time was the first time we ever got a hearing in the House. They killed it just outright every other time. But unfortunately, the Speaker killed it on the floor. And so it failed. And because of that, by the way, Governor Greg Abbott, rightfully so, challenged many House members in their races. And I think 15 or 16 were defeated on that issue. The governor had said, we can do it the easy way or the hard way. You can either pass it or this is an important issue to Texas families, and we're going to get it done. So I passed it for the first time in 2015. So I've been on this a long time. And we're going to pass a robust bill for all families because we believe that parents should have a choice where to send their child. And I want to put down all the rhetoric out there by the opposition. It says, oh, it's going to undermine public education. Let me just give you these couple of numbers. Last session, we put $39 billion approximately into public education for 5.5 million children in public school. We created a fund of $500 million compared to $39 billion, okay? $500 million for about 50,000 children whose parents believe they need choice. And that may be because maybe their child just is in a school, even if it's an A or a B school, that doesn't fit them. Maybe their
sure.
child has a disability that can't can't help their child. Maybe their child's being bullied. Whatever it might be, parents should have a choice. Here's what we know nationally. Less than 5% of parents opt for school choice because we have great schools in Texas, public schools. Most parents like their school and kids don't want to leave their friends. But you create this program for those parents and those kids who feel they have a need and they deserve that right. And it doesn't undermine public education. Again, 39 billion and 5.5 million kids in our public schools. And 50,000 and 500 million for school choice. So it's not undermining anything, and I believe it will pass. We have the votes because of this election in the primary that Governor Abbott and I were involved in, and in the general election. So I think we have the votes. So on Friday, I announced it would be Senate Bill number 2 because the budget is always number 1 each session. So Senate Bill number 2 will be our school choice bill. I'm asking the governor to put it on the emergency call and make it the first bill that we pass because we're not allowed to pass bills under the Constitution until March. But if he makes it an emergency item, we can take it up the first week. We will be ready in the Senate to pass it out immediately.
And the governor originally said last session he wanted $10,000 per family universal. That means anyone would be eligible for that. Is something like that likely to pass?
Last session, I believe the amount was actually $8,000. We'll work on those dollars with the governor. That's not an issue. So we will get this done, and it will focus on children in failing schools, but it will also be open to children in all schools. Again, just because your child is in a C school doesn't mean you shouldn't have the option for school choice, or they could be in an A-rated school. But that school just doesn't fit their child's needs, particularly maybe if they have a disability, which we have children with disabilities in our schools. I've been working in that issue for 30 years with children with disabilities, so I know it well. So this is a program, again, there's no reason for people to think it's undermining public education. It's not. $39 billion for public ed last session, $500 million for school choice. 5.5 million kids compared to about 50,000. That doesn't undermine anything. It just empowers parents.
And if this passes next session, how soon would it take effect? But by the fall, would it be immediately or September 1st?
Well, it's one of the reasons I'd like to pass it first. And I think the governor wants to get it out early, too, so that we can start working on it and schools can be prepared for that. So it just depends on the timing. Would it be ready for September of next year or the following year? Because you have to set up the system through the comptroller's office. Because the way it works, the parents don't get the money, Jason. The money goes to the private school that the parents choose. So you have to set up this mechanism, plus you have to have people apply. So it's not cumbersome, but it's a system that you have to put in place so that it can move smoothly. So I don't know if that would be for September. That would be our goal, September of 25. But if not, it would be the following year.
And the money time, and let me ask you about the money one more time,
sure,
too. $500 million, you said, is what's set aside for this. Is that enough to handle this statewide?
So you start out, you're not going to start out with a massive program because you have to make sure it's run well. So you start out with the program for 50,000 students. And then if it grows over time, if there's demand, which I think there will be, you can grow it over time. But again, nationally, in all the states that have some type of school choice program, less than 5% of parents opt for it. In fact, it's around 3%, quite frankly. So there's not going to be, this sudden rush out the door from public schools. It's going to be for parents who feel they have a right to have their child in the school that they think is best. And again, we have great schools in Texas. Most of our schools do really well. But look, we have some really failing schools that have been historically failing. And no child should be forced to go to a school that's getting a D and an F rating from the state. I mean, that's just, why would we do that? Why would we force any child to go to a school that's a failure? And they say, well, give us more money and we can fix it in 3 years. Well, 3 years in the life of a student, they shouldn't have to wait for 3 years for that school to get fixed. They need help now. So it's really about our schools, our schools that are failing, but we're going to make it broad enough, universal for everyone.
And let's talk about the politics of this for just a moment. The House of Representatives, Speaker Dade Phelan, essentially killed the Senate's version and what the governor wanted last session. Now, post-election, are there enough votes, enough Republicans replaced in the House to actually get this passed, what you and the governor want?
So you have 76 votes you need to pass a bill in the House, and I believe that we have 79 or 80 locked in. These are people who campaigned on it and people who voted for it before. Remember, Jason, last session, it was just a small group, a tiny group of Republicans who killed it. And most of those Republicans, Governor Abbott and myself, we challenged, and almost all of them lost their election because parents just know they need that right. It's a parental right. Again, there's not, you know, we're not decimating our public schools. 50,000 children out of 5.5 million. And I think we'll have, over years, it will grow, but it's never going to undermine public education. Our public education system is one of the largest in the nation. 5.5 million kids, 9,000 campuses, 1,200 school districts, 365,000 teachers. There's, you know, a program to give parents a choice to help their child, specifically who they believe has a need, is not going to upend that public education program. And by the way, Jason, I sometimes really get aggravated, quite frankly, that the teacher unions, not the teachers, but the teacher unions, and so some on the left, say that we're not funding education properly. We've increased public funding to education every year that I've been lieutenant governor. Secondly, we have increased teacher pay more than any other time during Texas history, and I personally got that done back in 19. We passed a bill last session for $5 billion, Jason, $5 billion to put in public schools and teacher pay. And guess what? Dade Phelan, the House Speaker, would not bring it to the floor. $5 billion. So that's still sitting in our bank that wasn't spent because the Speaker killed that bill. And even with a member, Steve Allison, who's been defeated, by the way, for opposing school choice, but even his own member standing on the floor on the last day, pleading with him to bring that bill to the floor for $5 billion for our teachers and our public schools, and Dade Phelan refused to bring that bill to the floor. You can go back and look at the videotape. I'm not exaggerating. Right. So if anyone's undermining public education, it was the Speaker last session and the Texas House.
If the House reelects Dade Phelan, yes. Do you think school vouchers are still going to get passed? Do you think he might work out some deal to limit things? Because at the end of the day, you know, both chambers could not agree on exactly the amount and who would be eligible.
Yeah. I believe we had an agreement with the House last time with Brad Buckley, who was carrying the bill. Brandon Creighton carried it for us. I don't think there was much disagreement on the bill that the Senate put out. You can always tweak things. We tweak things they send us. So that's part of the process. But we had a bill that we were comfortable with, and I think the House members were ready to vote for it. Remember, most of the House voted for it, but the Speaker stood up and said, show the Speaker voting present. Well, that means he's not for it and he's not against it, but it sent a coded signal to the members who wanted to say no, said, okay, the Speaker didn't vote for it, so we got cover. That's what happened. It was a sneaky play.
Is he, do you think he might do something again to try to stop this or at least have influence over it?
It would be a fool's errand, I believe.
To try to stand in the way of it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, the people have spoken. You know, all of these races with members who voted against school choice, with the exception of two or three, they all lost their election, Jason. Yeah. They all lost their election. The people have spoken. And by the way, when you poll it, 82% of Republicans in every county in the state, on average, support school choice. Nearly 65% of all independent voters and nearly 50% of all Democrats support school choice because it's a fundamental right. We shouldn't even be arguing about this. This is just one of those deals that those in opposition, you know, just spread all lies about, oh, it's terrible. They're going to undermine public education. Oh, it's going to destroy the system. It's just ridiculous on its surface. Again, 9,000 campuses, 1,200 school districts, 365,000 teachers, and 5.5 million kids, and a program for 50,000 kids is going to destroy it. It's just a joke.
School choice priority number one. Yeah. Let's talk about the budget surplus that the state is going to have again,
yes,
too. People are, you know, hate paying the property taxes in this state. Do you expect that surplus is going to be applied to the property taxes we all pay?
So, Jason, now you and I have talked about this for a long time. You know, I've been the champion of these property tax cuts and particularly the homestead exemption. And as you know,
sure,
we fought hard against the Speaker in the House who wouldn't pass the bill to get the $100,000 homestead exemption, which everyone's school taxes now on their M&O, which is the biggest part of their school bill. If they look at their bill, not their appraisal, appraisals don't mm-hmm. matter anymore for the most part. Look at their bill that they get in the winter, which they're getting now. Well, it's not winter out there. It still feels like summer to me, but you know what I mean, in November.
You're in Houston, though.
I'm in Houston. Yeah. The average home has seen a 41% cut in their school
right.
taxes since I've been lieutenant governor. We will continue to reduce property taxes. Every session, we should take part of the surplus and put it towards reducing property taxes. Last session, we spent $18 billion, $18 billion. For property tax relief, which was homestead exemption and compression, which lowers your school rate, and the state picks that up from our end. We're paying for that from the state level. So we're going to continue to do that. I've been a champion on this forever. When I came into Lieutenant Governor in 2015, your homestead exemption was $15,000. I raised it to $25,000, $40,000, and now $100,000 and $110,000 for seniors.
What's it going to go to next session? Any idea?
You know, Jason, I want to see how much money we have. I want to see all of our priorities, but it will be, last session was massive, and we will make a significant cut again. Remember, Jason, anytime we do that, we have to know that we do it every session.
Right.
Because you don't ever want to go back.
So you always need to sustain that.
And I believe, like, 18, for example, that $18 billion property tax cut, that is, without exaggeration, the biggest property tax cut in the history of the world.
Let's talk about last Tuesday's election. Yes. You were one of the few to predict, in Texas at least that I know of, the huge decisive win that Donald Trump and Republicans got. What will that mean for Texas, do you think, over the next 4 years?
I think I may have been the only one in the country. On a lot of other networks and everywhere I spoke, I said I believe the president was going to sweep all the swing states and have a decisive victory, which would give him a mandate. I even picked the number 312 electoral votes, and that's exactly what he received by sweeping the states. I just believe that from a lot of data, a lot of groundwork, being involved in the campaign and seeing where the public was going and not paying attention to the polls, by the way, because they were wrong. And I told everyone the Cruz race wasn't close. He was going to win easily, won by 1 million votes. And I said Trump would win by 1 million, 1.2 million. He won by 1.6 million in Texas. Do you know, Jason, it just, the Valley has changed. You know, we elected our first Republican senator in the history of the Valley for the Texas Senate, Adam Hinojosa. And in Starr County, which is on the border, that was all blue 8 years ago, Donald Trump got 57% of a border county in the Rio Grande Valley. The world is changing. So when you say what is different, the difference is that there's never been a coalition for a Republican presidential candidate that has white, black, and brown, that has people who are rich, middle class, and poor. This is a coalition of everyone you can think of. Heck, in Michigan, he had the endorsement of both the Jewish community and the Arab community. So, you know, when people say, well, you know, we're a divided country, the Republican Party has never been more united. And his historic victory, winning every swing state, taking down the blue wall and winning every state, which I thought would happen, it gives him the mandate to make the changes that the public has demanded. Secure border, address inflation, and get our pricing down the grocery stores again. Law enforcement, protect our citizen in the streets. Heavy, strong military so that we don't have war. You know, when he was president, we didn't have any wars break out. For the last 18 months he was president last time, not one soldier was killed by enemy fire. So all of these issues, leading with the economy, securing the border, I can't wait until we get there in January. You know, Jason, we've spent $4 billion, $4 billion in our budget the last three sessions now to secure the border since Joe Biden's been president, because we had to do everything we could to protect our citizens. Well, we're going to be able to take a lot of that money now and put it back to our taxpayers for roads, for water, for education, for health care, for all the things that we need that Joe Biden forced us to spend because he was letting millions of people cross the border, criminals and terrorists. I mean, we know it. Everybody knows it. So that's why he won. So it's a mandate for Republicans in the state of Texas to continue our conservative path.
Well, that's one of the questions I was going to ask you, too. Yes. Do you think Texas can now spend some of that $4 billion elsewhere? If so,
yes.
How much?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know, Jason. You always like to, it's your job, I understand. You all like to pin me down. How much? What are we going to do here? Hey, it's November. We come in on January 14th. We have a lot of work to do. We're working on our budget right now because constitutionally we have to reveal it in January. I have legislation starts getting filed next week. So you have to, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say what every bill says and what we're going to spend, because that would be unfair. It's early, but it's also unfair to the members. The members, you know, my job as Lieutenant Governor is to lead us in a direction. The members, working with myself and my team, we write the legislation. And so I'm not going to sit here and say it's going to do this, this, and this, and how much we're going to spend on this, this, and this. That's for our members. And I respect their right, both parties, to say, hey, here's what we think we should do. And, you know, in the Senate, we work in a bipartisan way across the aisle. 98% of our bills have Democrat votes with it. But the difference between the Senate and the House, we don't let the Democrats run the Senate. We don't let the Democrats pass bills with, you know, all Democrat votes and just two or three Republicans. That's what the House does. They'll pass a bill with all Democrats voting and a handful of Republicans, like casino gambling is an example. You know, they say, oh, we almost passed it last session. You know, they almost passed it with every Democrat voting for it and about one out of four Republicans voting for it. We don't do that in the Senate. I have 19, I now have 20 Republican senators with Adam Hinojosa, and we have 11 Democrats. And if I don't have 15 or 16 Republicans out of my 19 or 20, then we're not passing the bill out. It's just not what we do. We're a Republican conservative state. We work across the aisle. We have good relationships. I'm proud that our homestead exemption passed 31 to nothing last time. I'm proud that the budget passed, I believe it was 31 to nothing. It may have been 30 to one, but with broad support. We know how to work across the aisle without seceding, without ceding power to the other side to let them run the Senate like Dade lets the Democrats run the House. We're a Republican state.
A few last quick questions for you, if you don't mind. I was speaking at an event the other day, and a guy came up to me afterwards and asked me, hey, is the state going to pass and approve casino gambling this next session? I said, great question. I'm actually going to be interviewing the lieutenant governor here shortly. I'll find out. Is there any chance that might pass? Because it's all the talk in Dallas.
Yeah. So, Jason, the Sands particularly, they've been working really hard to get it passed here. And I've continued to say to them, that it doesn't have the support of the members because the members don't have the support of their people who want it. When we finished the session, no one called and said, oh, you didn't pass the casino bill. It's not on anyone's top 20 list. It doesn't mean there aren't people who really want it. But like anything else, Jason, it really bubbles up from the ground to tell a House member or a senator that they want this legislation to pass. And that just has not happened. Look, I just said a moment ago, in the House, last session, they were within three votes of passing out a casino bill. It was every Democrat, and I believe 28 out of 85 Republicans who voted for it. You don't pass major legislation in a red conservative state with the Democrats controlling the show, particularly on a major bill like that. So three out of four Republicans in the House didn't vote for it. They didn't have the votes. And in the Senate, I have, again, now 20 senators. I might have three or four senators out of 20 Republicans who support it. That's it. So it's not about, look, Greg Abbott and I have said the same thing. If the legislature passes a bill, in his case, if they pass a bill to his desk, he said he'll look at it. Remember, Greg Abbott back in 16 said he wouldn't expand the footprint at all of gaming. So now he said he'll look at it. Well, I've said the same thing as Lieutenant Governor. If the members have a bill and they get the votes to get it out, I'll look at it. But Governor, I don't want to speak for him. He can speak for himself.
Sure.
I'm not leading the parade on it. I'm not stopping the parade on it. But we do not pass bills where only 20% or 25% of the elected officials support it. We just don't do that on any bill. So it doesn't have the support. And the casino people have tried, well, it's all about the Senate. It's all about Dan Patrick or it's all about, you know, whomever. No, they've never worked the vote. They've come in and spent millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they just think, well, magically it happens. It doesn't. And by the way, if a bill ever started to get close and moving, you're going to hear from the other side. You're going to hear from the pastors. You're going to hear from the business community. You're going to hear from the citizens who oppose it. Right now, you haven't even heard from them because they know what I know. The votes aren't there. So I know there are people who want it. We're not trying to, you know, tell people what they should do in their lifestyle. I'm just saying the votes aren't there for it. And we'll have 6,000 bills filed, Jason, probably this session. That's about what happens every year. We don't give a hearing to any bill that doesn't have support. Right. We don't have the time. So if any
time
bill has
precious.
Support, that's what happens. Time is precious, including this interview. So anyway, that's I think, I don't want to speak for the governor. I think that's where he is. That's where I am. And I see no support there for it. Things can change. But as of today, there's no groundswell out there. And if you poll it and you look at Republican primary voters, about half of those voters are strongly against it.
And then I want to clarify real quickly, Trump's election, do you think Texas is going to see any direct benefit from that? Obviously, the border is something he campaigned a lot on. Anything else that stands out to you that how Texas might benefit from his win?
Jason, let me just say, it's always great when you're in state government to have a great friend in the White House. We have a great friend, once again, in the White House. In the last 4 years, we've had virtually zero communication from Biden or his administration on the border or anything else. I mean, they just blocked us out. And so, you know, I would go to the White House when President Trump was in the first term I don't know if once a month, but several times a year. I know we had a health program for rural hospitals that we needed to address. It was done. We needed help on the border. It was done. I mean, when you can pick up the phone and call the president in the Oval Office and say, we need help, that's a big benefit for any state. And we're, Governor Abbott and myself, the Attorney General, we're in that position. We have a personal relationship with him. I talked to him on Tuesday morning, on the election morning. We talked about the election that day. When I said, you're going to sweep all the states and win a mandate and get 312 votes, by the way, I told him the same thing Tuesday morning. And so we have that relationship. We had zero relationship with Joe Biden. They just turned their back to us.
Well, last question here too.
Yes.
If President-elect Trump calls you, wants you to join his administration, would you do it?
No. It's a very interesting position to be in, because if a president calls and asks you, it's very tough to say no. It could even be seen as, like, what do you mean no? I'm the president.
Right. What
do, this,
what do you,
you
mean no? Yeah,
what do you mean no? How do you mean no? Because, by the way, I was told that by someone in a past administration where someone turned the Republican president down. They said, what do you mean? So respectfully, I've made it very clear that I'm staying in Texas. Look, the lieutenant governor of Texas is the best job in the legislature in the country. I love it. I'm a policy guy. I like to get down in the trenches and work on legislation. I love what I do. I get to live in Texas. I have 8 grandkids. I've been married 49 years. I don't need to go to Washington. Other people can go and they'll do a fine job, but I don't need to be in the cabinet. I don't need to have a special position in the administration. I love what I do, and it's the greatest job anyone could ever have, is to be the lieutenant governor of Texas.
Governor, we always appreciate the time, sir. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Click subscribe and get Eolitics every week. Eolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.